Ken here. If you only listen to our podcasts, I want to encourage you to visit unfetteredmind.org. Here you'll find, free of charge, dozens of original articles and contemporary translations of Buddhist texts and prayers. If you find these helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can continue to expand the website and support your practice. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Guru, Deity, Protector, Part 7.
Page 24 and 25. Again, this is in the Shankara tradition. And you have in the center Mahakala. Now, Mahakala actually is a generic term. There are a lot of Mahakalas. There's the two-armed Mahakala, Garnacham, that's the black cape. There's the four-armed Mahakala, which is the principal protector in the Trikong. And Drupakaji, I believe, a couple above. Oh, and also in the Sakya. Then there's the tenth Mahakala in the Sakya tradition. This is the six armed Mahakala. Well, Mahakala, Maha means great, Kala means black. So, great black one. That's what they have in common. They're big and they're black. And Kali is the feminine. Okay. So, close your eyes. In front of you, you see Ganesh, the elephant-headed god of wealth in the Indian tradition, squashed flat on his face. And you notice that there are two huge feet. And there must be tremendous weight because Ganesh is completely crushed, these vomiting jewels, uncontrollably. And you look at these feet, and they're misshapen and distorted. They're big. And you notice that around the ankles are set jingling bells that are used in like Indian temple dancing. And snakes instead of ankles. And your eyes drift up, and you see that there's this tiger skin. Kind of skirt. And your eyes drift up and you see this girdle of bone ornaments. And then you notice dripping heads. They're severed heads and they're all dripping with blood. And your eyes, and you're on the ground, remember, looking up at this, because this is a big guy. And there's a skull cup, and it's filled and overflowing with blood. And right above it, you see there's another hand that's holding this chopper, which is the only thing you've seen is butchers using that. It's got a hook. And you hear this Damaru hand drum violently rap. And a trident, another one, and a noose. Another one. And this big black torso protruding belt. And you see this face. Huge, bulbous eyes. Three of them. Eyebrows. They look red hair flaring up, it looks like they're on fire. The big bloodshot eyes and the mouth open, grimacing, contorted with fury, the big canine fangs dripping down. Skull cap on his skull crown on his head, and red hair flying up, those like flames, and the whole thing is all surrounded by fire. What are you feeling about now? How are you feeling, Newton? Mm-hmm.
I'm scared.
Good. You just invoked protection. Want to hang out with this guy?
It doesn't sound very inviting.
This is what you are summoning. Now, how prepared is this guy to deal with some intractable habitual tendency in you? Think he's ready? Is he up for the job?
Probably too much so.
That's your problem. You don't really want to invite this guy in.
No.
No. That's why you're having a problem. Gets worse. I was just about to. Unfortunately, the 400-pound Lamo transmission is lost. That was lost in the 19th century. She was great. But we don't have her anymore. Okay. On his left. There's this really very strange colored mule. Sort of bizarre reddish brown.
Juice?
Nah. Bizarre reddish brown. Pretty sure that's what she writes. And there's this figure who is equally as large as this massive black person that you're not terribly anxious to hang out with. But this large female, large figure on this mule is the distortion of everything you consider feminine. She is huge. She's totally black. She has hanging breasts that are all withered. She has all of these sorcery implements. You know, the dice which determine your fate. She just throws them as she wishes. She has a stick, and your number is marked on this stick. And she holds it. And she's got on her saddlebag this bag, and it's full of every kind of pestilence you know. But it gets worse. Because in front of him, there's this completely mad guy, Trader Pollock, whose only function in life is to call as much misery as he can to everything. He rides a rabid bear. Thank you. He's in the bottom left of the picture.
Oh, left.
What's he called?
Chetapala.
Like a hound or something.
That's the bear. It's a rabbit bear.
Oh, wow. It's cold.
Bears and dogs are related, remember.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Dhinamitra with the red. He's considered similarly noxious, and then Traki Raja at the back. And then you have Dugantrakshe. Dugantrakshe means demon king. Here he is. He rides a black horse with white forelocks, which is an age-old nightmare. He's clothed in black silk. Carries a banner, a spear. Big, heavy slips. You know, Mongolian kind. And around them is everybody who thinks he's anything in their mind. Or she. How are you feeling?
I'm wondering why I came.
Well, that's the central question, isn't it?
Yeah. No.
Good.
Shock and awe.
Nah, shock and awe has got nothing on this. Jonathan. No. He's here to wake him up. Not necessarily. Do you identify with any parts of you that don't want to wake up?
I'm not playing games.
But I'm trying to point something out.
It makes it difficult to accept, but in principle, here's where this protection may be.
I think it would be better for you to think that his sole concern is your being awake. Now you may construe that as being for your benefit. But I have concerns about using that wording because there's a gaming idea implicit in it. You want to be awake for me? I'm having second thoughts.
Yes.
And what are you prepared to pay? You don't have to answer. That's the question.
So, in terms of practice, I invite somebody like this.
It's worse than that. You remember this morning, Anita was asking me, how do I know? I said, you already know. He's already in you. He always has been in you. And he knows what needs to be done. Are you going to let him do it? Get it?
Yeah, it won't be easy.
It's very easy for him. And you know what happens if you don't let him do it?
He'll cause havoc in other ways.
Yes. That's right. So he's not particularly interested in your welfare. only interested in you being a wife. And so is she. And she's much worse. Compared to her, who's a pussy. Feminine energy goes much deeper. Questions? Deborah.
When is deeper faith?
Possibility of you being aware. You can be very inconvenient that way. Elizabeth?
The way you describe him, the way you just went through it, it doesn't seem like a new view.
Pardon?
It doesn't seem like he needs feet.
Oh, he needs feet.
Big guy.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that in a moment. Pardon?
You want him on your side, the way you described it this morning.
Actually,
him and build the contrast.
You want to be on his side. Mm-hmm.
But do you feed him then to join with him somehow?
We'll get to feed him in a moment.
Are these also called spiritual warriors?
Warriors?
Yeah, the Bikinis and
oh, yeah, and somebody inevitably would have translated them that way.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we have these intractable, intransigent, devious, ruthless, parasitical patterns. Do you know of which I speak? And sometimes it feels like that's it, that's what we are. There's nothing more than that. But the whole protector thing is about is there's also this aspect of awakening mind which can deal with the worst, absolutely the worst of those patterns. And we'll do whatever's necessary to deal with it. And Six Iron Mahakala, it's a kind of very interesting origin. The expression of Chenrezig. Unambiguous, that's his origin. When Chenrezig fell into despair and blew his bodhisattva vow and his head burst into 1,000 pieces, that's when he took form as the 1,000 arm Chenrezig. But at the same time, a black hung formed in his heart. And out of that black hung arose the Six Arms Mahakala. So this is a direct expression of pristine awareness. And that's ultimately what, that's one whole class of protectors, they're direct expressions of the natural knowing that is our human heritage, Buddhahood, whatever you want to call it. But it's the expression in the form which is going to take care of the most intransigent and impractical and devious and ruthless passion. But along with that, you know, when you have a the big guy on the block? What happens to all the would-be hoodlums?
When the big guy goes, the little
hoodlums
move up.
Yeah, but the big guy isn't going
anywhere. Okay.
They fall in line pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. That's what Ostbound means. Mm-hmm. The Ostbound. These are your natural abilities, which for a very long time, probably for most of our existence, have been serving habituated pattern resistance. But now the big guy's on the block. They no longer serve pattern-based existence. They use all of that deviousness, all of that terror, all of that power, all of that might to serve awakening. They're really bad news.
How do you recommend working with this, you know, as part of regular practice?
Well, if people want to do this, then they're going to take up a Vajrayana practice. That's the discussion we'll have individually. It's not a light business. Okay. So what do you feed them? All the richness of the world and everything in it. Just the first thing. Jewelry, gold, you know, fort knots, you know, whatever. Silver. Platinum.
Yeah.
You do it. It's what you're doing right here. Just imagine it. And you let it to your imagination? Good. So you just imagine it all. Beautiful clothes, silk, satins, whatever. Ferrari, BMW. Perfume. Whatever. I know a few women who are really attached to their BMW. All of it. Music. Art. Sculpture. Food, finest foods prepared by the finest chefs, served by the finest waiters and waitresses. You just let your imagination run wild. I mean, you just go with it. Treasures from the fearful charnel grounds where evil forces were destroyed or spread about. Changes the picture a little bit, doesn't it? Now, if you're one of these big black monsters, are you satisfied with everything beautiful?
No.
Want more? Want more?
Oh.
You want to taste other people's terror and fear and horror. You want to taste all that. You can use it. You know how to work with it. So you feed that to them, too. Put in the picture here. Didn't I explain this to you? We've been doing protective chants for a few decades.
Well, I know, but never quite so in your face.
Oh. No, we don't
do
that.
No,
we don't
do that.
Okay. The power of this contemplative devotion increases these commitment offerings to express the great secrets. So your devotion in here, you just magnifies everything. Ravens that soar like Garudas, fleet horses and majestic yaks, graceful sheep and fierce dogs, the 13-fold black offerings enrich the gifts. So these are 13 black ravens, 13 black dogs, 13 black horses, 13 black yaks, 13 black lions, 13, you know, it just goes on and on and on. It's beginning to sound like a nightmare. That's what you're feeding on, it's your nightmare.
Is there any symbolism with number
13?
Yeah.
I don't think we need to say much about 13.
So, there is.
Yeah. Okay. Always being a number that's distrusted. Right?
In all cultures?
Well, this culture,
yeah,
certainly in our culture.
Yeah.
For a long time, there were lots of buildings built and there was no 13th floor. That's a pretty strong statement. Pardon? There was no floor that was called the 13th. Thank you. No, it's a very obnoxious number. You know why? What's the number immediately below it? Why is 12 a good number? You've got to think about ancient societies here with very limited mathematical ability. Right? 12 can be divided into whole numbers. You can have half, a third, a quarter, and a sixth. So it's a very easy number to make fractions out of without ever having to deal with a fraction. And early societies couldn't deal with fractions. That's why their number systems were based on 12, Babylonian 12 and 360. That's why we still have 360 degrees and 60 minutes. It's all 12 days. It can be divided into fractions. So 13 is the opposite. It can't be divided into anything. It's a prime number. 8. Same as 7. Yes. That's why you feed it to them. Magic arrows adorned with silks and mirrors, knife hearts packed with soul stones and spells. These are very old black magic. Sorcery items.
Knife hearts?
Knife hearts, that's what it says, isn't it? Stones which are used to extract the soul from another person. This is, I said earlier, this goes back far in our culture. This is how you have power.
Are soulstones
relative
stones?
Huh?
Are soulstones
relative stones? No, they're stones which have been charged to the source. Seas of medicine juice and blood, these are two traditional offerings. Mountains of sacrificial offerings, those are the Tormas, and power offerings. And note the last one. And especially mind itself, utter simplicity, single-minded confidence and devotion in the Guru and the Lord inseparable. So you're moving through four layers of offerings here. There's the outer ones, they're the beautiful. Then there's the inner ones, these are your nightmares. And you're working with stronger and stronger forces in your own mind. And then there's the secret ones, this old black magic stuff, you know, which you don't want to talk about, and nobody ever does. And then there's your own mind nature. You're off all of it. To the Guru, Lord Inseparable, Lord of Pristine Awareness, you see below, directly below Mahakala, there's a white six-armed figure. That's the white Mahakala. Now, whereas the black Mahakala is totally terrifying, the white Mahakala is so over the top in terms of wealth. He doesn't stomp on one Ganesh, he stomps on two. Oh, he's your wealth deity, and so you want wealth? Pardon? Yeah, I know. Buddhism is stronger than Hinduism. Stop. It just
takes. My guy can beat up your guy.
Yeah, that's exactly what's going on. But it took Hindu deities as symbols of obstacles and problems and took them over. It's an old, age-old trick of spiritual traditions. They borrow stuff from other traditions to beat up on. Happens all the time. Anyway, there are actually many different forms of Mahakala, depending on what you want to happen. Yellow, green, red, so forth. And then you get Lady Glorious Goddess, that's Padma Rama on the lower right. Then Malefactor and Force, Death Lord, Demon Lord, 75 Earthbound Protectors. So this is whom you're offering. This is who you're connecting with. And you tell them, protect me from threats now, later, in intermediate states, increase doors of food, wealth, and dharma, make understanding and facts of teaching spread, so that all beings free and full awakening. It's quite unambiguous. This is one part of the Mahakala ritual. Yeah.
The
Kali Shrine?
Yeah.
It's
sacrifice a lot of dough every day.
Yeah.
To this day.
I know. It's, that's heavy place.
Yeah, right next to the military.
I mean, it's always crowded with pilgrims. Yeah, I mean, I remember because you're just crammed in this line. When I went, it was after Kala Rinpoche's funeral. So I've never been there. We were staying in Calcutta. There were about three or four of us from Los Angeles. And one was a woman who's a student of Kala Rinpoche. So she and I went to the shrine. This is a very strong, independent woman. And as we went through this, and we got through this, and there was this crowd, and we came into the shrine, she was grabbing my arm. It's intimidating. But there's very, very old, powerful forces there. Okay, so this is working very, very deeply in China. And you don't do this a lot. You do this a lot, you get quite seriously disturbed. There are seriously disturbed. Protective practices is primarily a balancing. And as talked about this morning, we do this at the end of the day. And yeah, it arouses a certain amount of anxiety, but also it's kind of releasing. Because you're actually working, all the time you're working with the guru, you're working with the yidam, these forces are developing energy, so you acknowledge them through this. And that's how things are kept in balance. And that's why protective practice is always a part of any intensive Vajrayana practice. Keeps things in balance. I remember Lama Kama Tenmin, who's our retreat director, coming in. Lama Kama Tenmin loved to do Mahamudra practice. That's what he did. He was really very good. You know, just sit all day, all night. Sometimes he'd go to sleep, then he'd just wake up and continue meditating. And he wasn't very good about a lot of technical aspects, because he's not a very learned person. But when he talked about nature of mind, it was very clear. Everything, exactly how it was. It's very, very good. I remember he came in, and I was doing something in the shrine and wanted to talk. So I really should offer a few more tournaments to Mahakala. But I'm really lazy. but I know I should. It's a good feel. There's a tension there. Mm-hmm. Not in balance. So, it's
the
important.
Balance between the kind of
each well,
side
you,
of
when you're moving into deep awakening,
right.
These dark forces awaken, and so you feed them. You acknowledge them, you don't ignore them.
Is Maha Mudra a companion, you know, coupled with Vajrayana practice as a emptiness to form?
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. And, so, now, that's why I was saying, just for familiarization purposes, you do this no more than once every half hour. And as many of you know from your interviews, when you've had a certain point, you don't need to do it. You spend the rest of the time resting in open awareness. Using guru, you don't practice. Going from here, you know, once a day is enough, if you choose to do this. Now I want to talk a little more generally. When I was preparing for this retreat, it struck me that there may be a connection between the three roots, which are guru, deity, and protector, and the three marks of existence. Now, the first one's quite obvious. The Yidam, or the deity, is connected with non-self. As we discussed yesterday, we have all of these different identities, senses of self, each one associated with a whole set of reactive patterns or personality. And one way of looking at Yidam practice is adopting one identity and approaching everything in life from that. And some of you had some interesting experiences doing that. But, as we discussed, it's a step towards non-self. Rinpoche was once asked, why would you practice Vajrayana? He said, once there was a very rich man, very, very rich, and he went to his teacher and said, I really like to practice. I'd like to wake up, to be free of these habitual reactions, all of this greed and power and stuff. His teacher said, good. I'm glad you've come to this intention. And the rich man said, but I don't know what to do. I mean, I have plenty of wealth, I could just go off into retreat. But I don't think that's going to work. And I have so much wealth, I could fund temples and help the poor, but it's not going to do very much either. I mean, I do a lot of good, but I don't think it's going to, I'll just get attached to doing that instead. And he just said, yes, you're right. This is quite perceptive on your part. So Krishna said, so what do I do? And his teacher said, I want you to convert all your wealth into white stones. Well, the rich man thought this is kind of strange, but and his teacher didn't give him any further explanation. He just said, convert all your wealth into white stones. So he sold a business here and he sold a business there and he bought a quarry and mined white stones, and when that quarry was finished he got another one, and he just had to buy quarries all over the world. And but gradually, after a great deal of effort, all he had was this gigantic pile of white stones. All of his wealth was exhausted, and he had this, and he said, this mountainous pile of white stones. So he went to his teacher and said, okay, I'm done. Do you want to see this pile of white stones? The teacher said, no. Who needs white stones? That's your own fault. Okay? Guru practice. This is about suffering. Cause of our suffering, going to get right down to it, is that we don't get what we want. And we do get what we don't want. So we have all of these longings in us. I want this. I want that. And as many of you experienced when you worked with longing faith, longing form of faith, all of those other longings said, oh, longing? Yeah. And they jumped on board. Now, the instruction I've given you here is, if you don't try to end those longings, you follow them. You follow them completely. So you want your guru to be the father or mother you never had. Do you get this?
No.
You want your guru to be the lover you never had. Do you get this?
No.
You want your guru to take care of you the way you always wanted to be taken care of. Do you get that? So, when you really go into all of these longings, you come to the end of them. And the end being, this is never going to happen. Yes? You can't always get what you want. Yes, that's right. Oh, poor Mick Jagger. Still doing the same thing he was 30 years later. 40 years later. The guru is about suffering. That leaves the protector. Well, we know from our discussion this morning that the ancient roots of the protector were about survival. But are you going to survive this experience we call life?
No.
Is survival a worthwhile goal to aim for? Pardon?
Based upon.
If you open up this protector energy in you, are you going to survive?
No.
So the tech is all about that. Come to understand and know directly in your own experience. You can't survive this. Trunk is a mortal phrase. The problem with a lot of you is you want to be present at your own funeral. Can't wake up and have a sense of self at the same time. It's just not possible. You have to die. Okay. Let's do the chance. Is there any questions? We have time for a couple of things.
I think I already
answered.
Okay. Julia? Is the instruction for happening tonight that we work with Mahakala or that we continue to work with the community?
Yes, that's fine. It's all the same energy. Yeah. So it's to continue with the practice. And as I say, when you go through this process, opening the mind by joining with the Guru, manifesting as the Adam, invoking protectors to take care of everything that prevents you from being awake, you may experience something. You rest right in that experience. Don't try to understand it. Don't try to analyze it. Don't try to hold on to it. Just rest. If it fades or you're distracted or whatever, then for the rest of that period of meditation, either go back to invoking the Guru or being the Adam, or resting in open awareness. Just resting it in either of those three. And then do the same process next half hour. You only do this once. I don't want you doing it too many times.
Okay. How does the Guru relationship differ from transparency? I think things like is it related to time?
It's quite different. Transference, of course, arises. So you may see the Guru as your father, your lover, your mother, and whomever. The Guru doesn't particularly cooperate with that. In fact, he or she doesn't cooperate much at all. And so, because the Guru doesn't cooperate, and the Guru may do this in a lot of different ways, you become more and more aware of it in yourself. Now, if you're kind of in denial about it, it begins to manifest more and more strongly until you can't miss it. But some people are remarkably obstinate. The transference, whatever you're projecting onto the guru. Then you have a decision point. Are you going to own it as your own projection, which feels like you're letting go of what you've always wanted most in your life? Or are you going to hold on to it? If you hold on to it, your spiritual practice stops.
I think I'm
not going to
be
like that.
I mean, it's not spiritual,
but
you come to
the Lord. Yes, you do. But it's really at a different level of depth because of your own practice of meditation and all the energy that's coming from that. And the guru. You know, the psychiatrist in psychoanalysis, where this comes up, they don't usually do very much. Right? They listen a lot. The guru tends to take a more active role. So, we have the famous stories of Naropa, which Tilopa. Naropa and Tilopa go for a walk, come to the edge of a cliff, and Tilopa goes, you know, if I really had a faithful student, he'd jump off this cliff. Naropa jumps off. That's quite dramatic, but in many cases, the guru, the teacher, will provoke that, draw it out, so you really have to see it. Okay?
Yeah?
Yes?
Just along those lines, the fundamental difference, though, is the waking mind, and that is a completely different dynamic.
Awakening mind on the part of the
guru practice, yeah. It's awakening mind. And in transference, it's dealing actually with patterns. So it's not
yes.
The goal is
different.
It's
goal.
Completely different
yeah.
goal.
And that's a very good point, Chris. Thank you. In most psychotherapy, psychoanalysis, the goal is the assuaging of pain. In spiritual work, it's waking up. And there's a real difference between the two. Let's do the evening chants. Great Bhajavara, Tilo, Nara, Napa, Nara, Norka.
Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you do wish to use a part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.